This evening I'm going to do three things. One is read a little bit more from Prabhupada's wonderful inspirations. I'm waiting for that to come, so I'll do the second one first. A nice pastime of Krishna, Radha and Krishna, in Vrindavan, and then Bhagavad Gita. So the particular pastime, for those of you that are familiar with nectar of devotion, there's a pastime in nectar devotion that's just a part of the pastime that's described, where Jatila is throwing dirt balls at her son, Abhimanyu. And it's this little description about it in relation to rasa. So that same pastime, there's Rupa Goswami describing that pastime. Chronologically, after Rupa Goswami, number of generations later, was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who compiled that and some other pastimes. Maybe I'll describe one of those pastimes tomorrow evening. Coming from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, elaborately described. So in other words, as we used to say in the old days, it's bona fide. There was in the beginning, when Prabhupada started an art department, there were devotees that maybe they took a high school art class. You know, like some of the kids make drawings during class and they don't really know what they're doing, but they have been making paintings of Krishna. And some never even had a paintbrush in their hand, and Prabhupada created an art department. They told them to paint paintings of Krishna. So they started painting paintings of Krishna. I remember one of the earliest paintings was a painting of Narada Muni that one of the Matajis drew him with big arms. Narada Muni. Prabhupada saw the painting and he laughed and he said, "He's not a meat eater." And the Bodhi said, "Well, I drew him like that because I wanted people to be attracted to him with big muscles." But no. Very refined features. He's Narada Muni. So like that, they didn't know what... They wanted to do the right thing, but they didn't know what the right thing to do was. So then they started getting posters from India of Krishna and Gajendra Moksha and different things. So they would get an idea, and then they gather these different posters, and one by one they would show them to Prabhupada, and the question was, "Prabhupada, is this bona fide?" And the answer was, "Yes, it's bona fide, but..." or "It's not bona fide." And one of the criterion for it was not bona fide was Krishna alone. Like you've seen those beautiful artwork of little baby Krishna with his face in a cloud. The artwork is beautiful, but Prabhupada said it's not bona fide. Because Krishna's never alone. We're the cows. We're the coward boys and the Jamuna River and the peacocks and so forth. Krishna's not alone. That's not bona fide. So the first temple I lived in was in the Boston Temple, where now it's called the BBT, then it was called ISKCON Press, where they did the production of Prabhupada's books, and they had the art department. And I was really fascinated by not only, you could hear the stories of Krishna's pastimes and then see the depiction of Krishna's pastimes. It all came to life. Prabhupada said, These paintings are like picture windows into the spiritual world. So what's a picture window mean? So here's a wall, and of course there's windows, but you know, big one, that's a picture window, and it tells you what's on the other side of the wall. Like in Tirupati, we had our GBC meeting room in this really big room, and on one end was a, the whole wall was a window. And you look out the window, and there's Tirumala Hills. Wow! No meeting room has this kind of vista. So we were empowered just looking out the window. Tirumala Hill. Like looking out your window, and there's Govardhan Hill. Very, very nice. So the paintings are like picture windows into the spiritual world. So hear the narration, see the depiction, the picture window. You're not there, but that's what's on the other side of this place is the spiritual world. It's really nice. And then through sound vibration, you're there. So, in the earlier form of Nectar of Devotion, the first publication, there was a painting of this pastime that I'm going to narrate. And now I'm going to narrate it in detail that you won't find in Nectar Devotion, but it's bona fide. Rupa Goswami said, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, and they're not creating some imaginative yada 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 story. This is Krishna's pastimes for our disclosure. And there's a cast of characters at the beginning of the story, three of whom you may not be familiar with, you may or may not be familiar with: Jatila, Katila, and Abhimanyu. Now, if I tell this whole story, we're not going to have time for Bhagavad Gita class. But hey, what the heck? Who's Abhimanyu? Besides the son of Arjuna and who? Subhadra. Besides that Abhimanyu, there's another Abhimanyu. Oh. Who's the other Abhimanyu? So-called husband of Radharani. What's a so-called husband mean? Two things. Our acharyas describe that Abhimanyu is an expansion of Krishna's shadow. Doesn't say the technology of how that happened. Expansion of Krishna's shadow. And another is so-called is related to the pastime when Lord Brahma, wanting to examine the limit of Krishna's mystic potencies, he stole the calves and put them in a cave. Krishna went to look for the calves, and then he stole the cowherd boys and put them in another cave. Came back to the scene of the crime to see what would happen, and there he saw the calves and the cowherd boys. And he went back to the cave, and they were in the caves. So we went back to the bank of the Jamuna River, and he didn't see all the calves and cowherd boys. He saw it, the same number of forms of Lord Narayan. You know the pastime. And then many other things happened, and he offered prayers. So during that time, it's described in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam and in Krishna book, during that time that Brahma was gone to look in the cave, one whole year had passed on earth. Correct? And during that one whole year, those expansions that looked exactly like the cowherd boys went back to their homes, and their mothers took care of their little boys. And as the year passed, their affection for the little boys became exactly like their affection for Krishna. And they were astounded. Because those of you that are mothers or have been mothers, and have had sons, you may have affection for your son's friends, but you don't have affection for your son's friends more than for your son. But in Vrindavan, they have affection more for Krishna than for their own son. And they know it. And when their affection for their own son became like their affection for Krishna, they became bewildered. Because they had a desire to have Krishna as their son, so Krishna fulfilled their desire. He became their son. And he spoke exactly like their son. He looked exactly like their son. So, Krishna can do whatever he likes. And he does whatever he likes. He expanded identical forms and also calves. The cows desire to directly give their milk to Krishna, to have a calf like Krishna. So he fulfilled their desire. You know the pastime that's described, that the cows are up on top of the hill and the calves are at the bottom of the hill, and the cows saw the calves and they started running down the hill. You ever seen a cow run? I've seen a cow run in Mayapur. They're really clumsy. Their whole body moved like this. But they were running down the hill, and the cowherd men were running down the hill after them with their cowherd stick. Come back, come back. But they wouldn't come back. They ran faster and faster because they saw their calves. That was an expansion of Krishna. And by the time the cowherd men got to the bottom of the hill, they saw the calves and they saw the cowherd boys, and they just lost it. They forgot their anger and just embraced their sons out of affection, like for Krishna. So during that 1 year time, Krishna made a suggestion to Nanda Maharaj. I think it's a very auspicious time for marriage. Very auspicious time for marriage. And you know, in our village custom, the little boys are married to little girls when they're very little. I think it would be a wonderful idea if all the little boys married little girls at this auspicious time. Nanda Maharaj said, this is a wonderful suggestion. I'll ask Purnamasi, Yogamaya, the internal potency, personified. Purnamasi rubbed her hands together, said, this is a great suggestion. And they were all paired up, and Abhimanyu, who was Krishna, married Radharani. They didn't live together, husband, wife, they were just married. So when they went to grow up, they would be married. They knew who their husband and wife would be. And the year passed, and those who were the cowherd boys, as Abhimanyu was a cowherd boy, they were covered by Yogamaya to not understand that a whole year had passed and anything. But they just heard from the parents that you married so-and-so. Oh, okay. That's who I'm going to marry. That's who I'll be married with when I grow up. So Abhimanyu was the so-called husband of Radharani. And he had a mother and a sister. His mother's name was Jatila. And his sister's name was Katila. Jat is a pile of hair on your head. She was like a mad woman. Like cross-eyed. And everyone knew her as a mad lady, Jatila. And the daughter was very envious, apparently. It's Leela. It was simply personalities and acting to enhance Krishna's pastimes. Like somebody asked today, some little discussion about why did Balaram seem to favor Duryodhana? And it's Leela. Why did Jatila and Katila interfere with the meeting of Krishna to enhance the meeting of Radha and Krishna? When there's no opposition, it's one thing. When there's opposition, the cunningness of Krishna comes out. Just listen. During the month of Magh, which is January, February, the coldest month in Vrindavan, it's the same month that when the gopis were little girls, they did the vrata every day of bathing very early, worshipping Katyayani and bathing in the cold Jamuna River. But so it was an austerity. So that same month, Radharani took permission from Jatila to do this vrata, that she would go to the Jamuna just before sunrise, and just as the sun was rising, take her cold bath in the auspicious river Jamuna. So she went, her girlfriends came, and they went together to the Jamuna to take their early morning bath. Katila became very suspicious, and she disclosed her suspicion to Jatila. And Jatila said, "You try to find out what's going on. Why don't you go to Nandagram and just innocently ask, how is Krishna this morning?" That was their game plan. So Katila went to Nandagram and asked, "Oh, how is Nanda Nandana? Is he well?" They said, "Oh, he's very well. He's doing a particular vrata every morning this month. He's going to the river Jamuna to take an early morning bath." The plot thickens. Katila began to consider this Nanda Nandana. He's up to no good, meeting with my sister-in-law, Radha. But it was still dark, so she didn't know how to find the way. But she looked in the ground and saw the soft sand of Vrindavan. She was just following the footprints of Krishna in the sand. It's like the opposite of Akrura. Seeing the footprints of Krishna in the sand, he was in ecstasy. Katila was in diabolical ecstasy. Detective Katila. So she reached the river Jamuna from Nandagram. That's quite a distance. She reached the river Jamuna, and she was searching in each of the groves to see if she could find Krishna and Radha up to some mischief. Meanwhile, one of the messengers of Radha forget the messenger's name she was on a reconnaissance mission. She was just checking out what's going on out there, if there's any problem, and she happened to run into Katila. And so she quickly ran back to the grove where Radha and Krishna were. But she's seeing the divine couple so happily in each other's association. She didn't want to say anything. She just said some very pleasing words. How nice it is to see both of you together enjoying pastimes. So she spoke very sweetly, and then she said, "But there's something I think I need to bring to your notice. Katila is on her way to this very place, and everything could be very problematic. I think we should do something." And all the gopis became very alarmed and looked to Radharani what to do. And Radharani looked to Krishna, and he just smiled and said, "Don't worry. I'll take care of everything. In fact, I'll turn it into a prank upon Katila." Do you know what prank means? Like a trick. He called for Vrindadevi and said, "Please quickly arrange an Abhimanyu costume for me." Now, he doesn't need an Abhimanyu costume. He can just expand himself as Abhimanyu. But it's the Leela. He asked for an Abhimanyu costume. So he got an Abhimanyu costume and found out from the messenger of Radha where Katila was. So then he came before Katila, said, "Oh, my my dear sister, how nice to see you. What brings you here so early in the morning? And she disclosed, your beloved Radha is with that prankster, Nanda Nandana, and I think they're up to no good. Oh, this is very good. How did you get this news? And she disclosed how she got the news, and he said, well, I'll just wait right here. And you go ahead, and if you find them, immediately come and get me, so I can then see them in the middle of their mischief. I'll just wait right here. I've got a plan. I will go directly to Kamsa and inform him that this bad activity is going on in his kingdom and demand that he bring a stop to it. I'll wait right here. Hurry back. Krishna, in disguise of Abhimanyu. So, Katila's feeling really empowered. So she started from Kaliagat and all the groves going in the upstream direction from the river Jamuna till she got to Keshigat. And near Keshigat there was a very well decorated grove of trees. And she saw the friends of Srimati Radharani. Aha! What are you doing here early in the morning like this? Oh, Katila, how nice to see you. Are you doing some vrata? Some religious activity? You're such a religious lady. Don't try to fool me. Just by the fragrance in the air, I can smell the musk scent of the body of Nanda Nandana. He's here somewhere with your Radharani, and I've come here to expose you. So please suit yourself, look wherever you like. Everything is fine. What's in that grove of trees over there? Oh, that's a very special place that the demigods personally came and put a latch on the door. I don't think you want to violate the demigods and break the latch and see what's inside. You could get a terrible reaction. He said, you're hiding behind some words of Dharma, but I know what you're up to, and I'm going to expose you all. And she went and kicked open the door. And inside she found a broken garland and a pearl necklace. Aha! The necklace of Radha and the garland of Krishna, they've been here. I'm going to take this to Kamsa and get you all in trouble. And Radharani came. Said, my dear sister-in-law, what are you talking about? This isn't my necklace and Krishna's garland. I've never seen such a necklace, and Krishna's not here. I tell you, you can go door to door to every home in the whole of Vrindavan and become the laughing stock for falsely claiming bad things about other people. You'll be in big trouble. And all the gopis came around Radha, and Katila thought, I better watch out, they're tough. I think I'm going to leave now, but I've got the evidence. So she went to the place where Abhimanyu was waiting. He said, oh, you've done a very good job. This is excellent. Now we can really get that Nanda Nandana in big trouble. And his father, Nanda Maharaj. But don't tell anybody. I've got a plan. We don't want to bring bad name to our family. I'll take the garland and the necklace of pearls to my dear friend Govardhan Mali. He's the husband of Chandravali. And I'll say, Krishna was with Chandravali. Here's the evidence. And you have a very good relation. I'm very concerned about my Radha. This debauchee Krishna, he can do anything. But you have a good relationship with Kamsa. So you go to Kamsa and you tell him the bad things and ask him to bring 100 men soldiers and 10 men on horses and arrest this Nanda Nandana and put him in jail. So you go quickly now back home safely and tell Jatila, I will be there very soon after I've been seen Govardhan Mala. And Katila thinking, wow, they did a really good job. And the gopis, they went back to their homes. Radha went back to Yavat, where she resided, and went to her room to take rest. Krishna absorbed himself in some pastimes for a few hours. Then, still wearing his Abhimanyu costume, he went to see Jatila and Katila and said, that rascal, Krishna, he is going to get it. Kamsa and his military, 100 men and 10 men on horses are coming just now down the road. But before he gets here, this so-called Abhimanyu, Krishna's made a disguise, and he's going to come here and try to enjoy with Radha right here in our own home. So you get up there on the archway and make mud balls. And when he comes to try to come into our house, you hit him hard with all those mud balls and tell him, get out of here. Oh, the real Abhimanyu, having a long day of working in the field, he came back home and saw his mother and sister up on the arch above the house. And they said very bad things. You rascal! You so-called husband of Radharani! Get out of here! And they threw their mud balls at him. Dinabandhu says it's cow dung balls. My dear mother, what happened to you? You've gone mad. There must be a ghost that has inhabited. And he went to go look for an exorcist to get rid of the ghost that was causing his mother to act in such a mad way. And meanwhile, Krishna's in the room with Radharani enjoying pastimes together. In this way, that's the end of the story. In this way, Krishna enjoys various pastimes. As we were discussing yesterday, he has such affection for the residents of Vrindavan and the love of the residents of Vrindavan because of the intimacy of their affection for him. I just used up 36 minutes. We have not much time left. I'm going to read now. Let's switch the channel to Srila Prabhupada instructing us, his followers, how to go forward into the future and have a bright future and help others to have a bright future in spiritual life. Can we close those doors? Because I want everybody to be very attentive, like completely, 100% attentive. Prabhupada's instructing his followers how to make their life successful. When I first came to your country, my dear sons and daughters, when I first came to your country, I had no idea how much the American people would cooperate with my Krishna consciousness mission. But now, good boys like yourself, and all my other spiritual sons and daughters all around the world, have been giving me great hope that I may be able to successfully fulfill my Guru Maharaj's plan. I have formed this GBC for that purpose, to keep the devotional standards at the highest level and at the same time to manage a worldwide organization. Therefore, Krishna consciousness movement is a very important movement. We appeal to the sober class, dhira, not the adhira. We also accept adhira and dhira by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the mercy of the Goswamis, just like these boys and girls, they were adhira. Now they are dhira. Adhira? Adhira means without any responsibility, doing all nonsense. Actually, they are rich nations' sons and daughters. They are doing everything. But now they have become dhira. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. Yes, sir. That is dhira. You are already intoxicated. You are already illusioned in this material world. If you still go on drinking, where is the possibility of knowledge? You must have sober brain to understand. So this is going on. Therefore, my appeal to all the sober men to understand this Krishna consciousness movement and join it for the benefit of his personal self and for the benefit of his country, for the benefit of the whole human society. That was a Pandal speech in India, in Delhi. I thank you very much for your letter dated January 1, 1968. I am so proud to have such spiritual sons and daughters like you, who are so humble in their dealings, but who are so high in their spiritual understanding. Lord Chaitanya instructed us to be more humble than the grass on the street, and more tolerant than the trees, and to offer all respect to all, demanding no respect for ourselves. All these nice qualifications make one worthy to chant Hare Krishna. So just follow these principles and keep staunch faith in Krishna and in spiritual master, and your life will be successful without any doubt. My dear sons and daughters, please accept my blessings. I am due receipt of your letter, undated, along with your offering of $100, and I thank you very much. You are all very nice, sincere boys and girls, and Krishna has been very kind to send you all to help me in this great task of trying to save all the fallen souls from such a dangerous position. At every step there is danger, but under the strong grip of Maya, we forget this. So, the task is very great, to give real knowledge, Krishna consciousness to everyone, and I am so much encouraged by your determined efforts. Please increase more and more. Krishna will help you. Two more. I'm happy to hear that so many guests are attending your temple. Actually, that is the same story everywhere. I become convinced that our Krishna consciousness movement is finally having some effect on the world, and I am very satisfied with the work of my sincere disciples for assisting Lord Chaitanya in this way. Actually, he has said that this Krishna consciousness movement will spread to every nook and corner of the world. So there is no doubt it will happen. He is God, and how can he be wrong? So it will happen. So if we are intelligent and we assist and get the credit, otherwise someone else will. Human life begins, this is another letter. My dear spiritual sons and daughters, please accept my blessings on the recommendation of Govinda Das. I have duly accepted you as my disciples. Human life begins where there is systematic education in the science of God consciousness. Just some days ago, I was discussing with Professor Alistair Hardy, head of Religious Experimental Research Unit at Oxford. It was his opinion that the problems of human life are overpopulation, environmental pollution, etc. But from Bhagavad Gita we understand that God is the father of all living beings, so the father must be competent to provide for all the children. And in the case of the Supreme Father, this is actually so. We get it from the Vedic literature, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. Among all the eternals, there is one chief eternal being, and he is engaged in supplying and fulfilling the desires of all the others. Therefore, our conclusion was that the real problem is not overpopulation or pollution, malnutrition, etc. The actual problem is godlessness. So you are all intelligent boys and girls, therefore my request to you is that you study the science of Krishna consciousness and solve all the problems of the world by systematic propaganda as far as you are able to do it. See the Prabhupada key? And now to Bhagavad Gita. Because of time, I'll just chant the verse, and if you have a book. Shreyan dravya mayad yagya jnana jnana yagya parantapa sarvam karma kilam partha jnani parishamapyate. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. Purport. The purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge. Then, to gain release from material miseries, and ultimately, to engage in loving transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, parentheses, Krishna consciousness. Nonetheless, there is a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice, and one should know this mystery. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifice should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter onto the spiritual platform. Depending on differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karmakanda, fruit of activities, and sometimes jnanakanda, knowledge in pursuit of the truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. So this is Transcendental Knowledge, chapter 4. And just a reminder from yesterday, the starting with text 24 through this text 33, so that's 10 straight verses out of the whole chapter, is describing the means of achieving transcendental knowledge. Because Krishna has said earlier, one who can have transcendental knowledge of him doesn't take birth again in the material world. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chakva deham punar janma na. One doesn't take birth again in the material world. So the principle that elevates one to transcendental knowledge is sacrifice. And there's sacrifice that stays on the material platform. First of all, there's unregulated, everyone's doing some sacrifice. Just get born. Or even before you're born, just get a body in the womb of a mother, and it's trouble. Difficulty. And then throughout the sojourn of the soul in this life form and the next life form, the next form. So the unregulated is also, there's austerity and difficulty. But this is speaking of the regulated kind, according to the codes of the Vedas. The elevating principle is the principle of sacrifice. We'll go back to chapter 3. What does Krishna say in chapter 3? Real simple. You do something, there's bondage. And you can't do nothing. So there's bondage. Damned if you do and damned if you don't, as they say. Or catch 22. You can't do something or do nothing. Because it's bondage or bondage. So what's the solution? Sacrifice. So now chapter 4, different types of sacrifice. Some like it this way, some like it that way, but the principle is the principle of sacrifice. And then there's sacrifice without knowledge and sacrifice with knowledge. The real, at least initial purpose of the sacrifice, it's all leading to, as yesterday's verse is describing, liberation. Different types of sacrifice are proved by the Vedas. All of them born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. But before liberated is knowledge. Who you are as opposed to who you aren't. What's reality and what's illusion? And we belong to the reality side. And if you don't have the reality light on, you're in illusion. So one who wants to get out of illusion needs to take up the principle of sacrifice, and born of different natures, the embodiment we have and the mind that we have, the psychophysical nature that we have, we're inclined to this kind, that kind, the other kind, if we're dharmic. So there's, as is stated in this purport, there's faith. So there's a whole chapter coming up later. Divisions of faith. If one doesn't have faith in Krishna, they'll have faith in something, according to the modes of nature, because faith is intrinsic to the soul. So this mode, that mode, the other mode, different types of faith, connect that faith with scripture and you get sacrifice, because that's yajna is the principle, the elevating principle. But supposing I don't have proper sambandhagyan, I don't know what's what. I'm just, I don't like it here. I want to get out of here. I want elevation out of the darkness of the suffering condition. But I don't have proper knowledge. So those that do those kinds of sacrifice without proper knowledge, it's not spiritual. That word spiritual, I don't know how much is used over here in India, but in America it's a really popular word. Somebody is spiritual. They're not religious, but they're spiritual. That's like politically correct. To not be religious, but be spiritual. What that means, what they mean when they say that is, I don't adhere to any doctrine. I don't follow anyone or anything. But I like to do things in the mode of goodness. It's impersonalism. It's atheism. I mean, explicitly atheism. But spiritual atheism. I do good things. I'm kind to the animals and kind to the environment, and I do acts of kindness because I'm a spiritual person. Or so and so is a spiritual person because, you know, out of this darkness of ignorance, there's somebody that has a little goodness. They're a spiritual person. They're compassionate. They're clean. They're honest. They have some qualities of goodness. That's a spiritual person. No path, no faith, just spiritual. Not religious, just that's a common buzz. out there in Wild West. Without the contact with Shabda Brahman or the Vedas, those sacrifices stay on the material platform. That happens in the, whether it's here or there. It remains in the material platform. So what's the elevating principle? It's contact with the Vedas. Accepting the authority of the Vedas. Having faith in the authority of the Vedas. My faith may be colored by or modified by the mode of nature in which I'm situated. Divisions of faith. But the faith goes to the Vedas, inspired by or impelled by the modes of nature. But because the Vedas are there, the connection is made, faith in the Vedas gradually elevates one through the modes of nature, to the higher modes of nature, and in the higher modes of nature comes detachment from the lower modes of nature, and the sense of happiness that's thought of in the lower modes of nature, and a more elevated sense of happiness, sense of the qualities of a Brahmana. Sama dhamma tapakshocham shantir arjam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam. Brahma karma svabhavacham. So the culture, the Vedic culture, is to, through many lifetimes, elevate one to the position of a Brahmana, or the quality of goodness, working Brahma karma svabhavacham. So where one's svabhava gives rise to quality or activity. Gradually, many lifetimes. Prabhupada calls it the stairway as opposed to the elevator. So it's gradual elevation. If you have a qualified brahmana, which in the age of Kali there aren't, and if you strictly follow lifetime after lifetime and don't go, to the left side or to the right side into the ditch, just keep going on the path. Gradually, lifetimes, that the Vedic system provides a means for gradually elevating those that won't surrender to Krishna. The elevator is just surrender to Krishna. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Just surrender to Krishna. No. Many times Prabhupada referred to the commentary of Dr. Radha Krishna, who said Krishna is asking too much, surrender unto him. That's his commentary from 1866. He's asking too much. Therefore, and then just, gave the rest. It should be something else. So if he wants to write what his own ideas are, fine, but don't call it Bhagavad Gita commentary. The philosophy of Dr. Radhakrishna, not Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, the gradual process of elevation, of sacrificing material possessions or attachments to the material possessions, not necessarily you have to sacrifice the possessions, but attachment to the possessions. So commonly that means you give the possessions. If you're not attached to them, you put them in the care of some good cause. Like, chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, there's the topmost. If you can't do that, do this. If you can't do this, do the other thing. If you can't do the other thing, do this other thing. So then Krishna starts going back up again. The principle of sacrifice of material possessions. I'll read it. If you're unable to work, performing karma yoga, basically, then try to give up the results of your work and try to be self-situated. Try to give up the results of your work and be self-situated. You know, be charitable. Don't be miserly. You receive something, give charitably. Give up the results of your work and try to understand who you are. Try self-realization. Try for it in a prescribed manner. If you can't take up to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, that's the speculative kind, however, is meditation. Better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. But without peace of mind, how can you get knowledge? How can you contemplate anything? Your mind is going to be agitated, your meditation and development of knowledge. So better is to be detached. And one of the classic examples is King Rantidev, who was so detached that he was known to be completely charitable. And one time, it's in the description of Rantidev in the ninth canto Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Indra wanted to test him. So Rantidev was performing a long fast, something like a 100-day fast. Can't remember exactly the number of days. Anyone here fast for Janmashtami? Could you imagine fasting for two Janmashtamis in a row? And then multiply that by 50? He was capable of a lot of austerity. And he was the king. So on the final day, he was to break the fast. They prepared a royal feast for him. He sat on his royal throne with a royal feast, and as he was about to break the fast, in came a brahmana. How auspicious! A brahmana has come. Please, you break the fast first. And the brahmana sat down, and he took half, left the other half of the king. Oh, the king was very happy to honor the brahmana, and as he started to break the fast with the remaining half, in came a man with some puppies. And he said, "My puppies are hungry. Can I have something for them?" So he said, "Oh yes, here's something for them. You take, give it to them." And he had left a glass of water. So he was getting ready to break the fast, taking some water, and a pauper street person came and said, "I'm thirsty, can I have some water?" And the king said, "What a wonderful opportunity. This human form of life is meant simply for serving others. And you're very kind, you're giving me the opportunity to serve you. I'm so fortunate. Thank you." He gave him the water. And then they disclosed, actually, the brahmana and the man with the puppies and the beggar were Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Indra. They just wanted to see, what's the extent? What's his breaking point? When will he stop being charitable? He had no limit, because it was just to the core. He was charitable. And they blessed him that you should go back to Godhead at the end of this life. You're so pure, so fixed in principle. So better to sacrifice the fruits of one's work, not blindly, but in a scriptural guided manner, because then the mind can be peaceful. Without that, the mind is agitated, thinking something in the matter of gratification of myself instead of serving others and ultimately serving God. So that when there's this principle that applies to us, we're devotees are also supposed to be charitable and detached from sense gratification. We don't give things up. We want to see yukta vairagya, that kind. Everything, not two pockets, one pocket. Everything is for Krishna. Everything is for Krishna. Everything is for Krishna. not some little moderation something that's not for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. And when that principle is attained or followed, then one becomes purified. And in that detached position, knowledge naturally awakens. Knowledge of who we really are as opposed to who we really aren't. Awakens naturally. And then the same principle of sacrifice continues in knowledge. And knowledge, sacrifice in knowledge brings realization. And sacrifice in that realization brings a natural inclination for serving Krishna, the source of everything that we've been sacrificing and our ability to do the sacrifice and so on. That's what's being said. So this is the final verse of those 10 verses. And next, tomorrow, is the very famous 434 Bhagavad Gita. It's the next section. From whom do we get this transcendental knowledge? So in other words, we can associate with a qualified person, a tattvadarshi, and not get transcendental knowledge. We can get information. But transcendental knowledge isn't just information. Transcendental knowledge is, like the discussion this afternoon, is what Vidura wanted from Maitreya. He didn't want just information. He wanted realization. And he was qualified to receive that realization. And Maitreya was qualified to give it. Realization, not just information. That's transcendental knowledge. That's when Krishna is speaking transcendental knowledge, that's what he means. Not just that you can recite Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, verses 7 and 8, and you go back to Godhead. Janma karma chame devyam mevam yoveti tatvataha. Now you go back to Godhead. It's not just information or recitation. It's realization and connecting with the Supreme through sacrifice unto the Supreme and detaching oneself from the false sense of proprietorship. It's very sticky. Proprietorship. I'm past time already. The whole of Ishi Upanishad is about proprietorship. The whole of Ishi Upanishad is about proprietorship. It's a treatise on Isavasyam, everything belongs to God. And then how do you live your life where everything belongs to God? And then comes this distinction between knowledge and ignorance, or so-called knowledge. And then you can clearly understand the difference between knowledge and so-called knowledge or ignorance. And without that, it's fair to partly cloudy. It's muddy. It's not clear. And if someone challenges you, I don't know how to answer that because I'm muddy. I'm not clear. We're meant to become very clear and who we are, what our process is, what the goal is. And these verses of this whole section is helping us get there. And the next is the person from whom you can hear that or receive that transcendental knowledge. If you've done these acts of sacrifice properly, you're in a better position to receive it. To recognize who is a qualified person and to receive from that qualified person. Otherwise, it's still a little muddy. So read Bhagavad Gita very carefully and apply its principles carefully and get transcendental knowledge and Krishna. So it's 10 after 7. We're going to end. See if there's any discussion. Anyone?
Manoj, we hear Krishna's leelas are nitya leelas, and then we also see that Krishna is from childhood to boyhood and youth, he's transforming or changing the body. So how to understand that, when he's in the youth, so where is that that body and that leela, and is it going on? Or how to...
what you're doing is like looking with a flashlight for the sun. That's not how you find the sun, is with a flashlight. What is infinity? What is timelessness? Ask yourself that question, and then you can ask yourself this other kind of question. What does Nitya Lila mean? It's not... You're describing... The very language of the question is within time, when the activity is not within time. You have the wrong yardstick. It's called the mind. Doesn't work. His pastimes are not like ours. These children are growing up. It somehow happens. So where that little boy, little girl body was, it's gone. And now they've got another one. That's this kind of, growing up. But Krishna's not like that. Now let's start with Krishna in the prison house of Kamsa. There he is, Lord Vishnu, with his helmet and four symbols of Vishnu, and then the next moment he's a little baby. What happened to that Vishnu form? And just like that, he's poof, it's gone. Or, all the calves and cowherd boys, and poof, they're gone. Where'd they go? They're just on the other side of the pillar, that's all. They're just hiding. Krishna can expand and he can manipulate his transcendental energies however he likes. And they're not temporal, they're timeless. Eternally such pastimes are going on. It's inconceivable. So don't take the mind yard measuring stick and try to measure it. Is it this big? Is it Dr. Frog? Something else? Yes.
The Krishna's pastimes, what we are seeing now, or is in one yuga, right? In Dwapara Yuga.
Is it what?
Krishna's pastime that we are reading is from Dwapara Yuga.
Dwapara Yuga, but they're eternal.
After Kali Yuga, again, once the cycle comes in Dwapara Yuga, again these pastimes will be repeated?
No. Here's how it works. Put the microphone down. Somewhere, as the earth is turning, somewhere the sun is rising. Some part of the world, the sun is rising. And then the sun is rising, and then the sun is rising, and then the sun is rising, and then the sun is rising. The sun is always rising somewhere. Yes? Similarly, Krishna's appearing in one universe, and Krishna's appearing in another 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 universe. Eternally, Krishna is appearing. But actually, he's eternal. So it's not really, ta-da, and then he's gone. That coming and going, it says appearing. It's a pastime. From our perspective, it looks like, like the rising and setting of the sun. He's appearing, and then he does some things, and he disappears. But those pastimes are actually eternal. Something, I'll try to capture this. We know of events that have past, present, and future. Like, for example, we're sitting in Dwarkapuri Hall. Before we were sitting in Dwarkapuri Hall, we were somewhere else, and after we're done, we're going to be somewhere else. Right now, we're sitting in Dwarkapuri Hall. It's within the frame of time, past, present, and future. So what's an event that doesn't have past, present, or future? We can't even think of an event that doesn't have past, present, and future. What's an event that's timeless? It's always. We can't think of such a thing because it's beyond, it's achintya, it's inconceivable. And that's the nature of Krishna. He's inconceivable. Even he's inconceivable, he can disclose himself. Because he can do whatever he wants. So he can disclose himself and to our tiny, limited, ever so limited capacity, we can understand something. At least we can understand it's inconceivable. That much. But, and that it's different from these kinds of activities. It's another kind of activity. And this kind of activity is just a reflection of that kind of activity. This is the perverted reflection. That's the real deal. The real thing. Spiritual reality. And we can touch spiritual reality through spiritual sound vibration. Or it comes in contact with us and awakens the consciousness of the soul. Dormant spiritual consciousness of the soul. It's something like taking a spark that's gone away from the fire and bringing it back into the fire. And it starts to glow again in the fullest capacity. It's just a little spark. But it's not the fire, it's just a little spark. So what can the little spark know about the whole fire? Not very much, but something. And give off quality of heat and light, like the fire gives off heat and light, but quantity, very small. So our capacity is tiny. And trying to fathom the unlimited by the tiny isn't a very bright project. But we can know something. At least the advocacy in this fourth chapter is to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes and activities. His birth and his activities. So his appearing and appearing and appearing. So he appeared in Dwarpa Yuga, but that's once in the day of Brahma, just like the sun rises. So it rises, the appearance of Krishna, as he appears in Vrindavan, is once in the day of Brahma. That means there's 999 other yuga cycles in each day of Brahma. And Krishna appears in Mathura, but doesn't display his Vrindavan pastimes. He appears as forearm Vasudeva. And that's his name, Vasudeva. Forearm, Vasudeva. But he doesn't show his Krishna, his Vrajalila and the 999 other. So we have to wait for another day of Brahma for the sun to rise. The rising of the Swayam Bhagavan Krishna to appear. So there's big circles, and then there's smaller circles, and then there's smaller circles within those smaller circles. And time in Vedic calculation is cyclical. But actually, the pastime is eternal. And that's inconceivable. So the next time Krishna will show his pastimes in Vrindavan are in another 72 Divya Yugas, 72 times 4,320,000. Krishna will appear again in Vrindavan. Years. But actually the pastime is eternal. That means even when the universe is destroyed, Krishna's pastimes are still going on. Krishna's pastimes aren't dependent upon the material creation. They're eternal. truly inconceivable, because they're happening in the spiritual world. And Krishna sometimes displays what's going on in the spiritual world, in this material world, to attract the hearts and the minds of the conditioned souls to become properly situated again. Okay. I think I'm going to be in trouble for letting the class go too long. What's happening? Huh? Arati. Okay. There is such a great divide amongst people of our world because of following different religions. It's so painful. Is there a solution? This is a very similar notion to what's in the introduction of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, that the world is pining for one religion, one teaching, one way. But that requires Sanatana Dharma, not the divisions of faith that are based upon the modes of nature. Some people ask the question, why are there so many religions? And the answer is, there's modes of nature, that's why there's so many religions. What's that which is minus the modes of nature? That's Sanatana Dharma. Take away all the differences. What's the essence? The essence is serving God. Service, and in this elevated form, service to the source of everything. So that which awakens the dormant propensity of the soul to serve in a selfless manner, the Supreme, that's Sanatana Dharma. Then it has its application according to the modes of nature, but that's the elevating principle, just like we're speaking about the principle of sacrifice. Sacrifice. Anyway, sacrifice free from the modes of nature. That's love of God. That's pure. It's pure. What's the solution? Is the question. Here's Prabhupada speaking. The actual problem is godlessness. So you are all intelligent boys and girls. Therefore, my request to you is that you study the science of Krishna consciousness and solve all the problems of the world by systematic propaganda as far as you are able to do it. Become very wise, not in a, what's the word, sectarian way, but in a fundamental way, in an essence way. What's the message of Bhagavad Gita? It's not this religion, that religion. It's science, spiritual science. Become very wise in that spiritual science. Become a liver. When you live your life according to that spiritual science, wherever opportunity presents itself, you speak that spiritual science, but speak it by your life, because when you say it with your words but not with your life, it's not very compelling. But when you say it with your life, then your words are compelling. That's the best. And it's a big world, and there are lots of modes of nature out there. They're really thick. But that's the antidote to the modes of nature and misplaced faith, is purity. Purity is the force. Become pure in your devotion and extend compassionately to others. That's the best. And work cooperatively with others doing the same thing. There's that, with that unity in purity, then there's great strength. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I will consider that my whole Gaudiya Math mission will be successful if one person becomes a moon, better than so many stars. Stars give a little light, but the moon gives so much light. Better to have one moon with so many stars. So become a moon. Become that effulgent, transparently presenting, representing the message. That's the best. And as Prabhupada is saying here, according to your capacity, strive to your best capacity to be like that. And then collectively, some light will come into this dark place. Don't underestimate the power of light. It's very powerful to remove darkness. Become a bearer of light and let light enter your heart and radiate it. Collectively, it can change things dramatically. Okay. What is the difference between pain felt due to separation from Krishna by the Vrajvasis and the pain felt here in the material world due to loss of our dear ones? Just listening to Prabhupada explain that. And the difference is, the thought of Krishna becomes stronger, or the thought of Krishna becomes weaker. That's that simple. You know, spiritual means in relation to Krishna, material means in forgetfulness of Krishna. When there's loss of a dear one, if your thought goes to the spiritual plane, here's a soul. It's not about you or you know, your embodied condition and your mind. It's the soul. If you have been a good friend to that dear one, or brother, sister, mother, whatever it is, relation, then you've given spiritual association to those souls. And then that means that soul is in a trajectory closer to Krishna. So that's celebration. If not directly into Krishna's eternal service, closer to that position, released from the bondage of this situation into a more elevated position of intimate service. This is celebration. Prabhupada, remember once on the disappearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Seattle, he gave a lecture saying the disappearance day and the appearance day have the same spiritual significance. It's the glorification of the soul and the soul's gift to the world, and they're going on to give another gift in service to Krishna. It's the glorification of the soul and the soul's service to Krishna. Obviously the mood is different with disappearance than appearance. There's elements that are different. But in the spiritual plane, the honor of that great personality, separation of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, is their wish to have Krishna's association. And Krishna's direct contact and service. But that separation intensifies their love for Krishna. And the loss of dear ones covers us more in unhappiness and bodily conception and selfishness and what we're losing and so on. The more you can bring thought of Krishna, that it changes completely. Please give some examples of sacrifice in knowledge, and what does sacrifice mean? Okay. Here's a real simple one. It's time to greet the deities. It's whatever o'clock in the morning, you have deity greeting and you go for deity greeting and you do the ritual. The music, you know, the pujari blows the conch and the door opens and the Govinda song prayers, you pay obeisance, you do the ritual. You're doing the ritual. And because you do it every day, it just becomes a ritual and a ritual, and there's no feeling, it's just a ritual. Sound familiar? And then there's you're mindfully contemplating what it is that you're doing. What the song is saying, we're worshiping the deity. Or we're at Mangalarti. We're singing a nice song and making sure. Anyway. It's for the pleasure of the deity. The activity is, we're singing and dancing before the deity for the pleasure of the deity. And that's what we're doing. We're bringing our attention to the beginning part is prayers to the spiritual master, appreciating the different features of the spiritual master who is helping to connect us to Krishna and in different ways, eight stanzas. And then so if you're acting in knowledge, even we're doing a devotional activity in knowledge, it's a whole other experience than just doing it in a routine, mechanical, ritualistic fashion. You're, you know, the light's out and you're just going through the motions. And when the light's on, you're contemplating with devotion what it is that you're doing. It's a wonderful opportunity. And like that. Honoring prasadam. Contemplating what it is. When you're interacting with devotees, you're mindful of the great fortune that we have of being here together as devotees. And you know, those are nice thoughts, and then we check out again, go back into the mechanical mode. So acting in knowledge, you don't check out, you stay, because it's knowledge. It does not come and go. It's not the mind that comes and goes, it's knowledge. And you stay fixed. Sacrifice, literally sacrifice means Vishnu. Yagyavai Vishnu. Your sacrifice means Vishnu, unto Vishnu. That's what sacrifice means. That which is here, it belongs to Him. Let me give it to Him. Whatever it is, the body, mind, and words, and soul are for Him. That's sacrifice. Okay. So, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.